It's that time of the year. Your vacation is coming up. You can already hear the beach waves, feel the warm breeze, relax, and think about work. You really, really want it all to work out while you're away. Monday.com gives you and the team that peace of mind. When all work is on one platform and everyone's in sync, things just flow. Wherever you are, tap the banner to go to Monday.com.
Hello and welcome to Sunday School Dropouts, the podcast where an ex-Christian and a non-believing sort of Jew read all the way through the Bible for the first time. My name is Nico Bakulich.
And I'm Lauren O'Neill.
And let's get biblical.
Let's get biblical.
But before we do that, we have a few ground rules to cover. First of all, no more than two concealed pistols in the area at any time.
Yep. And free refills are only for coffee, no other beverages.
Also, I am the non-believing sort of Jew.
And I'm the ex-Christian. I am now an atheist.
Also, this is not a Christian Bible study podcast.
And it's not for children, because we swear a bunch and also discuss adult themes.
Adult themes like the stirring theme from...
Jaws! Doo-doo.
Yeah, beautiful.
Doo-doo-doo-doo.
Et cetera.
Et cetera.
Lots of repeat signs on that one. The other thing we want to mention is that usually this is the part where we would tell you what Bibles we read, but it doesn't matter today because, as you know, because you saw the title of this episode.
It's clever girl, you.
Mm-hmm. Clever girl or boy.
I won't allow it.
You got it. Everybody's a clever girl today. We're covering the second half of the Acts of Thomas, the apocryphal book of the Acts of Thomas.
Yes. So if you haven't listened to last week's episode, I mean, it's not as if you won't understand this one, but you'll get some background.
Yeah, background. Jesus has a twin brother. He is running wild in India.
Yeah. Okay. So in case you haven't listened to last week's episode, in case this is your first Sunday School Dropouts episode ever, I'm just going to give you some ultra fast facts on this. Just refresh your memory, even if you've heard this before. It's one of these Acts books. There were a bunch of them, but only one made it into the canonical Bible, which is Acts of the Apostles, or as we call it, Acts. And we did Acts of Paul and Thecla before, and now we're doing this one, Acts of Thomas, which is about Jesus's identical twin brother Thomas, who was also the disciple Thomas. That was just somehow never mentioned.
Nobody ever mentioned that he looked exactly the same.
His given name is Judas, but his title is Didymus Judas Thomas, which means twin Judas twin. Do you think that they ever like pulled pranks, like twin pranks when they were growing up?
I mean, this whole book is basically a twin prank.
Like Mary is like, hey, could you go get some water from the well, Thomas, or Judas? And then, like, he hands her the water and it's wine. And she's like, Jesus, you turned the water into wine again. Thank you.
I'm not sure if that's a prank. But to answer your question, yes, they absolutely did.
Like, what are some pranks they might have pulled?
I don't know anything about pranks. I don't like pranks. Okay, okay. You're asking the wrong person.
Didn't mean to lead us down the path to prank town. We had to split this book into two parts because it's insanely long.
Mm-hmm.
So
it's nigh 170 of your Earth chapters.
Oh my God. They're not really connected very strongly, so you don't necessarily need to have listened to last week's episode, but
all you need is to know is, like I said, Jesus has a twin brother and he's running wild in India.
Yeah, and he sold his twin brother as a slave. And then he ran wild in India, convinced a married couple never to have sex.
Mm-hmm.
scammed a king, blew up a Satan dragon snake thing, brought a couple people back to life, and most importantly, converted a shit ton of people to worshiping his identical twin brother, who is also God.
Right. Not him. Very clearly not him, the fact that he is running wild, doing all of the same miracles.
Yes. So, as he's traveling about, getting into mischief, a high-ranking captain of another Indian king. We've already seen several kings of various parts of India. It's kind of unclear what the author thinks India is, but
it's a good point. But
so a high-ranking captain of some Indian king hears about him, and he comes up and tells him, 3 years ago, I sent my wife and daughter to attend a friend's wedding, even though they didn't want to go. And a man and a boy ran up and grabbed them, and servants fought the attackers off, but they had seizures, my wife and daughter, and fell unconscious. And ever since then, they keep having seizures because they're demon possessed.
Mm-hmm.
Also, it goes to great lengths to describe these attackers as being black. And it says that the mom and daughter, as they were passing by, were like, oh, look at those hideous black people with teeth like milk and lips like soot. So maybe if they were less racist, this wouldn't have even become a problem. But now they're demon possessed. And
racism is the demon that lives inside of America.
I mean, fair enough. It would be good if somebody would exorcise that demon. So Thomas hears the story and he's like, yeah, cool, I'll go heal them for you. They travel a long way to this guy's city. Thomas has to tame some wild donkeys to pull them there. And finally gets there and he heals them. And he has to say a billion prayers. He has to bargain with the demons, kind of like when Jesus had to get the demons into the herd of pigs.
Exactly how Jesus did
that. Exactly.
Every part of this is just...
is a parallel to something Jesus did.
Yeah.
Except that they don't go into a herd of pigs. They just disappear.
Yeah.
And then finally they're healed from the grievous illness of black people touching them. Thomas keeps on preaching in this town. He's again cribbing from Jesus pretty heavily, including the line, come to me all who labor and are heavy laden and I will give you rest. I mean, shouldn't it be, and Jesus will give you rest? I don't think Thomas has the power to grant rest.
During this book, the lines do get crossed a little bit sometimes because everybody is treating Thomas like he is Jesus.
Yeah.
Essentially.
Yeah.
And he's not super dissuading them of that notion.
Because it's a big twin prank.
Yeah. You think this is a twin prank?
I mean, I think his whole life was a twin prank, basically. Mm. So now we get into the meat of this half of the book.
Because when he was preaching there,
yeah,
and he gives that speech about come to me all you weary, yeah, or whatever.
There's a rich lady in the crowd.
Yes, and the rich lady wants to get close to Thomas because she wants to hear the news about who
this new God is.
Man is.
They keep referring to the new God in this book.
This is a book that doesn't have a very strong opinion of or knowledge of whatever else is going on in India in religious terms. Because literally everybody will drop whatever they got for Christianity the first time they hear about it.
We never hear about anybody like there were the riots from the silversmiths who made shrines to Artemis.
Right.
We never hear anything about there were shrines to some Indian god. It's just...
and nobody's objection to the new faith has anything to do with another faith.
No.
It's just practical stuff, generally.
Yeah, like not being allowed to have sex ever and not being allowed to have children.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why anybody would have a problem with those two things. So this woman, her name is Mygdonia.
Great name.
And she goes up. Well, first of all, servants are carrying her in like a litter or sure. whatever. But she hops off the litter and goes to Thomas, and she's like, you know, like, please tell me what to do to be a Christian. And he's like, you know, great, no problem. You have to stop wearing all these fancy clothes and jewelry and being rich. And also, you can never have sex again.
Mm-hmm.
And so she goes back to her home, to her husband, Caresius.
Mm-hmm.
And he's like, oh, and he's a close relative of the king, King Mysdaeus. He's like, you know, what's wrong? You seem troubled. And she's like, oh, I'm just sick. And he's like, well, then why'd you go out and listen to that crazy guy shouting nonsense in the street? She won't eat dinner.
I like this, though. Tiresias or Caresius. He's like, okay, well, if you're sick, then I'll just have dinner brought into your chambers and I'll eat with you.
Mm-hmm.
And it's actually kind of sweet.
Mm-hmm. But she still won't eat even when he has the food room serviced. And he starts having like weird dreams, whatever. And then the next day, Mygdonia goes to find Thomas again. He lays some thick beatitudes on her.
Mm-hmm.
Blessed are the meek, et cetera, et cetera.
Mm-hmm.
And then when she gets home, her husband is like, where were you? And she's like, oh, I just went to the doctor. And he's like, oh, so that creepy traveling sorcerer is a doctor now? And she's like, yeah, he's a doctor of souls. And Caresius doesn't like that.
I like that she gets 100% caught in a lie and like pivots really quickly.
Yeah.
Because she's like, oh, I was at the doctor. And he's like, oh, the doctor, huh? Yeah, the doctor of souls is what I mean to say. I wasn't lying.
Yeah.
In fact, I was about to finish my sentence.
Right, and exactly.
You just cut me off.
Yeah. And Caresius is like, this guy seems really weird. Like, they say he doesn't eat. He says we can't smash. Are you going to follow that? I don't like that. He claims to heal people, but he doesn't take any payment because he knows he's a fraud.
Mm-hmm. Of course, that's the only reason someone would take no
payment.
Honestly,
like, doctors back then, like, none of them should have taken payment.
Doctors got to eat, too.
Like, here, have a heart-shaped piece of meat. That'll cure your heart. $5, please.
And this continues the theme established in the first half of the Acts of Thomas, whereby Thomas is asking you to give up everything sexual in your life.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that he's offering you is always described in very sexual terms.
Mm.
For example, when Mygdonia goes back to Thomas the day when she says she's at the doctor.
Mm-hmm.
She says, in truth, my Lord, I have received the seed of thy words, and I will bear fruit like unto such seed. The apostle saith, our souls give praise and thanks unto thee, O Lord, for they are thine. Our bodies give thanks unto thee, which thou hast accounted worthy to become the dwelling place of thy heavenly gift.
That's funny. I like did not see that at all, because I was just like, yeah, the seed, like the parable of the mustard seeds. I was like, and it will bear fruit. Yeah, it's the fruits of the spirit. Yeah. Like, it didn't even occur to me that that's an inherently sexual metaphor.
I like that he's trying to replace sex with this
with like
spiritual stuff. But
spirit sex.
Yeah, spirit sex. It's like you get to have sex with God forever in heaven.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't that sound like fun?
There's no safe word here.
So then when Caresius comes in to Mygdonia's room later that night and, you know, tries to smang it, she cries out for Jesus' help and she runs out of the bedroom naked, because I guess she sleeps naked, just wrapped in like her canopy bed's curtain.
Mm-hmm.
And again, Caresius is like kind of sweet. He's like really bummed out. And he's like, he says, like, the problem isn't really that she doesn't want to have sex. I'm just really worried about her. Like, she's acting really different. She's running places naked.
Mm-hmm.
You know, is she, like, mentally okay? Did this guy make her go crazy? Does this guy have her under some sort of evil spell? I'm, like, becoming a widower. because this crazy sorcerer is taking my wife away.
And when he gives this soliloquy, which is, it very much is that.
Yeah, yeah.
He lays out some pretty straightforward reasons why he's concerned, like you said. And he's like, I married this woman. She was so beautiful. She was above me in station, but I could have had any choice because I'm a buddy of the king's.
Yeah.
I don't have any kids, so I'm concerned about, like, my legacy.
And yeah, and also, like, I don't have any family. Like, I don't have kids to hang out with and spend time with because we just haven't had kids yet. They've been married for less than a year. So he goes to see the king, who's his close relative, King Mizdaeus. He tells him what happened, and Mizdaeus is like, don't worry, we will stick this dude right in the guillotine. So Thomas is staying at the at Captain Cyphor's house, whose wife and daughter he cured of having to talk to minorities.
Yes. And Cyphor has become the biggest Christian booster in the region.
Yeah, and he's like hosting Thomas the way that people host Paul, you know, in lots of Paul's epistles. And so they go, they get him from Cyphor's house. Cypher, like in the Matrix. And Thomas is like, sorry, you can't hurt me due to my identical twin brother who shares my DNA, except that we have different fathers, but also my mom was definitely a virgin when she had us, so just letting you know that. And then they put him in prison. And he's, of course, like, yes, I'm going to prison. In your face, Paul. I'm going to be the most persecuted Christian ever and the best. And I also look just like Jesus.
He's like, I know how this goes. We have entered endgame.
So the prisoners ask him to pray for them. And this is where things get really Gnostic. Really nasty. Because Thomas recites to them the Hymn of the Pearl. And this is a previously existing hymn, probably predates the rest of this text and was just like inserted in here. And it's really interesting because it's like a Gnostic poem, basically, or a Gnostic kind of like worship song. I'm so used to seeing, you know, this Old Testament poetry like in Psalms or Proverbs, and it's just weird to think of it being like biblical poetry that, like, didn't make it into the Bible. I don't know.
Yeah.
So this hymn tells the story of a prince from, quote-unquote, the East. You know, just the East.
Right. The East of wherever.
Yep, exactly. Mm-hmm. And they send him down to Egypt to bring back a pearl guarded by a serpent. And if he can do that, then he'll get to come back home and put on his fancy jeweled royal clothes again.
And in the hymn, his parents, you know, give him this mission, or whoever gives him this mission. And then they says, they armed me with adamant, and they took off from me the garment set with gems, spangled with gold, which they had made for me because they loved me, and the robe that was yellow in hue, made for my stature. They made a covenant with me and inscribed it on mine understanding that I should forget it. That I should not forget it, I assume.
So he goes to Egypt. And he's disguised as an Egyptian. But then some Egyptians trick him into eating food. And it's like a Persephone and Hades type of situation where you can't eat the food in the place, in the like magic place.
Right.
So once he does, he forgets that he's a prince. He forgets about the pearl and he becomes a servant to the Egyptian king. So basically, he's like the Gnostic concept of a human soul that is separated from heaven where the real God lives.
That's his robe and like his parents,
and
right?
And his parents. And is stuck on Earth, which was created by a shitty lesser god named Yaltabaoth, as we discussed.
That's in Egypt.
And he no longer has the knowledge or gnosis of where he came from.
And so the serpent has the pearl, the serpent being like Satan, and the pearl being Gnosis, and, right? Or wisdom?
Or, something like that.
Yeah.
And also him being dressed as an Egyptian is like the idea of how our souls are like clothed in shitty human bodies when we're on Earth.
I see.
Like, you see that, I think, a lot, we've seen it a lot in this book, and we saw it a lot in Gospel of Thomas, this idea that when you go to heaven, you'll take off your body like clothes, and it'll just be like dirty rags that you throw aside.
Which sounds cool. Sounds fun.
It also sounds like a little racist toward Egyptians here. I feel like this isn't the most like PC book.
These are folktales. Folktales don't have time for PC nonsense.
So then in the hymn, the prince's parents, the king and queen, send him this magical letter that reminds him of who he is. And so then he remembers.
And so that's Jesus coming down, right?
Yeah, or like the word of God in some form, probably Jesus.
Like in the case of Philip K. Dick, a pink beam of light.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then he kills the serpent. Yeah, he remembers who he is, kills the serpent by saying his father's name. Defeating Satan by saying God's name, I guess. Takes the pearl, uses the magical letter to find directions home, gives the pearl to his father, and puts on his fancy royal robes that are now even better than the ones he left behind. They're jeweled and they're many colored, and it says like knowledge is flowing through them.
Mm-hmm. And then he gets to fuck God forever in heaven.
Yeah. Just like all Gnostics do. So Thomas sings this to the prisoners. And they apparently love it.
Which is very hard to believe. As because like
maybe they love it because they don't have any idea what it means.
But even what I was going to say is without knowing anything about what it means, it's just like a really bad story.
Because like he just forgets temporarily. And he doesn't have to overcome any obstacles to remember.
Somebody sends him a letter. Yeah. He remembers and then just accomplishes the task. Yeah. It's not like it's the most arbitrary. Yeah. An artificial obstacle that could ever be put in a hero's journey, yeah, you know?
That's true. Meanwhile, Chiresias goes back home thinking, you know, the spell is broken. This guy's in jail. My wife will be back to normal, but she's not. And so he's like, you know, what's going on? We're married. I love you. We're following all legal and religious rules that we have here in
India.
In India, mm-hmm. Unspecified part of India. And I feel like I'm losing you and I'm really sad. It's again, like it's really.
His point of view is very well established and it's very relatable, honestly. Yeah. Well, her point of view is not well established.
She's just like.
She falls for Christianity instantly.
She's like, well, you're just a mortal meat sack and you're going to die. But now I'm in love with Jesus and Jesus like has eternal life.
I will say one of the things in this book that's so interesting is. Most of the big converts are women.
Mm-hmm.
And
Chiresias says to her, like, I know the sorcerer is in town. He keeps converting all these women.
Right. And the main selling point that Thomas seems to have for these women is if you're a Christian, it's actually good if you don't want to have sex with your horrible husband.
Yeah.
That's basically it.
Yeah.
And they're like, really?
Well, they're like you're going to have eternal life and stuff. But it does seem to be a big selling point that you won't have sex with your husband. Which I do feel like it seems like a bigger selling point for women, probably.
I mean, probably in a scenario where they don't have any choice or control over the matter. Then
right.
Yeah.
Right.
I mean, it's giving them choice and control. It's just that the only choice that's acceptable is none at all.
Right. Yeah. So Chiresias is like, okay. I'm trying to be really sensitive to your needs right now. Why don't you sleep on this?
He really is very reasonable, and he's trying to talk with her about this.
And he's like, in the morning, if you change your mind, great. I will let this sorcerer leave town. I won't hurt him because I know that would be sad for you. I'll just kick him out and we'll just resume our lives. He goes to bed and she just immediately takes a bunch of money and heads straight to the jail to bribe the jailers to let Thomas go.
Speaking of which, these jailers get the shit bribed out of them.
I know.
They get bribed like 20 times in the next couple chapters.
And it's funny because this is also the same thing we saw in the Acts of Paul and Thecla, mm-hmm. where Thecla went to break him out and bribed the jailers. And it's like, you know how there's like this phenomenon of women like becoming pen pals? To men in prison, mm-hmm. and then they will like marry them even though they can't even like have conjugal visits or anything. I always thought that was so crazy and so weird, but I feel like actually there must be some sort of deep-rooted human tendency toward that, because I feel like that's what we're seeing here and in the Acts of Paul and Thecla.
But it is also a Christian tenet to visit those in prison.
That's true, too. That's true, too. But it's so highly sexualized.
I know, but it's not mixed up with sex in the
when Jesus said it.
When Jesus said it, here, it's all sex.
Yeah, and in Acts of Paul, even more so.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, okay, she's headed to the jail in the night. And then all of a sudden she sees this guy coming toward her with a bright light in front of him. And she assumes it's like the king or something, because like, who else would have such a bright light?
Great thinking.
You know?
It's a classic. That's a classic Velma right there.
It's like electricity hadn't even been discovered yet, so it was very expensive. Only a king could afford that. And she's afraid the king will punish her, so she hides. But she's sad now because she won't be able to free Thomas, which means Thomas won't be able to baptize her.
But who was this mysterious light? And was it Mr. King?
And who was Phone?
That's all tremendous questions that we will answer in just a moment. We're going to take a quick break. And then we're going to be back with a little bit more Sunday School Dropouts.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Welcome back to Sunday School Dropouts. I'm Lauren.
And I'm Nico.
And we are talking about the second half of the apocryphal book of the Acts of Thomas, Jesus's identical twin brother.
His twin mischief brother.
But had some very mischievous acts as he traveled throughout quote-unquote India, whatever that means to the people who wrote this book.
Traveled the breadth and depth of a place.
And when we left off, Thomas,
I will say to interrupt you right away.
Great.
The thing that makes it so, people might be wondering, why are you being so not sure if it's India or whatever? There's a 1000%. It's the lack of specifics in this book that make me be like, well, this could be literally anywhere. And they just chose India because they've heard of it.
Yeah. And all the names, like none of the names sound Indian.
Yeah. All the names are Greek or
Parisius is not an Indian name.
And it doesn't mention we're going from this place to that place, or we're crossing even some mountains or a famous river, or they have a famous tree or nothing. It's just like anonymous places, random people acting like
it's
nothing.
Like very much like this is a somebody's travels in an exotic land.
Right.
Unspecified.
Yeah.
You know.
And that's just as much as possible, I think, to cover up the fact that this is just a gospel retread with Jesus's
twin brother. Yeah, which like, who thought it was necessary? I guess Gnostics did.
I don't know.
They needed their own little Gnostic
maybe
version.
It means something. Probably doesn't mean anything.
So Thomas, when we left, he was in jail. And Mygdonia, another great Indian sounding name, was trying to break him out. And she came upon a guy with a very bright light she thought was the king. But when he walked up to her, turned out it was Thomas. And she's like, whoa, how'd you get out of jail? And he's like, let's just say I have friends in high places and they're my twin brother Jesus. So now she wants to get baptized. There's no seal-infested dunk tank nearby, like there was in the Acts of Thecla.
Yeah, that was good.
So she runs back home and wakes up her nurse, who is named Narsha. Narsha, Narsha, Narsha.
Great. Nice.
And she's like, this is seriously, this is honestly what she said. She's like, nurse, nurse, like, you've done so much for me from the time that I was a little kid. And none of that meant anything because the world is fake. But could you do me one more favor?
Mygdonia turns into a real jerk, if you ask me.
She is. She's a huge jerk. And the nurse is like, well, fuck you, but sure.
Well, I still work for you, so I think I kind of have to say yes.
Yeah. And Mygdonia has her bring bread, wine, and oil, which are what she needs for her baptism.
Mm-hmm.
And she specifies, like, that she only needs a small amount of each, but she still is making her fucking nurse carry it. Like, why don't you carry it? Oh, your arm's going to get tired? I thought they were fake arms. Thought you didn't care about this world anymore.
I mean, in true rich person fashion, I don't think she knows where they keep any of that stuff.
Actually, you're probably right. You're probably right. She's like, where's the kitchen? I don't know.
Yeah, I've never been there.
Thomas would be like, well, I would put the bakehouses on the south end.
We all know where Thomas would put the goddamn bakehouses.
So she and Narsha go meet up with Thomas and have this very weird baptism ceremony where he, like, anoints her with the oil, and also she has to, like, take off her clothes and get wrapped in linen. I guess as a reference to, like, Jesus being wrapped in linen before he's put in the tomb?
I have no idea.
I don't know.
Like, taking off the worldly clothes of your body and putting on the heavenly clothes of linen?
Yeah, I don't know. It's very weird. Narsha, however, is very impressed by it. So mm-hmm. she converts too, and then they do the same thing to her. And then Thomas just moseys right back into his jail cell.
Which is, at that point, why are you going back to jail?
Yeah. So in the morning, Carisius comes to his wife's bedroom to check up on her. And now there's her and her nurse sitting there praying to Jesus. And he's like, oh, come on. So he and King Mysdeus decide to try.
Mygdonia gives approximately zero shits about what Carisius thinks.
Yeah. No, she's like, literally, I hate everything that's in the world and I only care about heaven and Jesus now. So Carisius and King Mysdeus. Well, actually, Carisius kind of convinces the king
mm-hmm.
to take a different tack here and try to persuade Thomas to recant on all this shit, and then hopefully that will break the spell he has.
Yeah, because, you know, women love a rebel.
Right.
And so, like, as soon as, you know, he goes back on it,
yeah,
it
seems
soft.
Yeah, as soon as he caves into the man.
Yeah.
But, of course, he won't. And Carisius's response is really interesting. He's, like, definitely the most realistic, like, three-dimensional character
mm-hmm.
in this story. He's like, if you don't give my wife back, I'm going to kill you and I'm going to kill myself because there just won't be any reason for living. Like, you've taken my love away from me.
Mm-hmm.
And Thomas is like, yeah, great. I'm happy to, you know, get rid of this sinful rag pile that is my body and shoot straight up to heaven. Gonna be pranking angels with my twin brother, just like old times.
Mm-hmm.
So he takes Thomas to his house, to Carisius's house, and there's Mygdonia, and she's literally praying to die. Like, her prayer is, dear God, I hate being alive. I hate being a sack of meat and poop, and I just want to be a soul in heaven. Please bring me there. Want to see those sweet twin pranks. And Thomas is like, obey your husband, quote unquote,
mm-hmm.
wink, wink. And she's like, no.
Well, she's like, my only husband is the big guy upstairs.
Yeah. Who looks
just like you.
Just like you. Funny how that works. And Thomas is like, well, you know, I tried, so. And then later that night, King Mysdeus makes a really dumb move. He's telling his wife, Tertia, this crazy story about, yeah, like, my cousin or whatever, his wife.
He's like, have you heard about Carisius's wife?
Yeah.
It's this crazy story. There's, like, this sorcerer. He convinced her not to bone down.
Yeah.
And now Carisius is losing his shit and getting up all in my business. I'm the king. I don't want to deal with some sorcerer.
And so he's like, could you go over and check on her and just try to reason with her? And Tertia's like, yeah, totally. So she goes to visit Mygdonia.
Fucking 2 minutes in the door.
Yeah.
She's a Christian.
It's fucking 2 minutes. They go to hear Thomas preach and she, yeah. So
it really, whatever else they got going on in quote unquote India at this time.
Yeah.
It's nowhere near the level.
Doesn't seem like there's a lot for women.
Yeah.
They seem really ready to be done with this.
They'll take literally anything else.
Obviously, the king is not very pleased with this turn of events.
He fucked himself.
Crap boy. He goes up to Carisius and he's like, what the fuck, dude? Why did you like fuck me over when it didn't even help you? Like, why'd you take my wife away from me when it didn't even get you your wife back? And Carisius is like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's like, the fucking sorcerer got my wife too. So he goes, the king personally goes to Captain Cypher's house and drags Thomas out.
And they beat the shit out of him.
Yeah, they bring him to like the royal dungeon or whatever. Or like the Supreme Court dungeon.
Mm-hmm. The Supreme Court dungeon.
Yeah. Just like an accurate description of America. And then while Thomas is locked up, the king's son, Vazan or Yozanis.
Yozanis, yeah.
As it's rendered in certain translations. Goes down to talk to Thomas because he's hoping to learn some secret magic tricks from this powerful sorcerer.
He's like, I hear you got a sorcerer down there, and I am a king's son of not much distinction, and I gotta get magic.
I would love some magic.
Instead, the only magic he learns
he is does the learn trick some secret knowledge
of how to give up on your entire life and plan out
and
a path
be a Gnostic
to
Christian.
Yeah.
And without knowing that his son has converted, the king orders his soldiers to torture Thomas so that he'll answer the question, like, who do you serve? How do you get these powers?
Mm-hmm.
You know, and Thomas just keeps saying, I serve Jesus. I get my powers from Jesus.
Yeah, not a secret.
Yeah. But that doesn't make any sense to anyone. So,
but also the torture doesn't even work.
Yeah,
because
they're going to burn his feet with, like, hot irons.
Mm-hmm.
But God just sends a flood and washes the irons away. And then the king is like, oh no, I'm going to die from this flood. Can you please pray to your God to save me? Like a pretty fucking ballsy move.
Agreed.
From like asking this from the dude you were just trying to torture.
But Thomas says, yes,
yeah,
I will do that.
He does. He prays. The water dries up. And the king sticks him back in prison.
And he's like,
he's not like, oh, thanks for saving my life. I believe in your God now. He's like, well, I guess I don't want to torture you right now. I'll put you back in prison for a while.
The text says that he's trying to figure out another way to torture him that won't backfire on him so badly. He's like, I need to find a way to torture him that he can't flip around in some sort of monkey's paw situation and get me with.
I don't like these little word tricks that he's playing. Of course, the captain and the captain's wife and daughter and the prince are like all chilling in jail.
Everybody's in jail.
Yeah.
Are there any prisoners down there, or is it just royalty down there?
It's like a good question. And Thomas is, of course, just, you know, a preaching and a praying.
He's loving it. Yeah. This guy. Jerk off hand motion.
Yeah, jerk off hand motion. He's goes on a very, very, very long speech, which is so fucking repetitive. It's not that it's like boring. It's not that the concepts are boring.
No.
But it's just that, like, yeah, we get the world doesn't matter. You want to go to heaven. God is eternal life, blah, blah, blah. At one point, he specifically mentions that Mary was a virgin when she had Jesus.
Uh-huh.
Seems like kind of a weird claim for Jesus's twin brother personally to make. Just, you know.
Nobody's
yeah.
like, quick question. How
what
does
about
that work?
No. She was definitely a virgin. I mean, I'm not the son of God. I was conceived regularly and born at the exact same time as my brother, but it was a virgin. Yeah.
Totally.
And then the prince Vazan is like
which is a Disney villain or something.
Yeah, it does sound like a Disney villain. He's like, yeah, like my dad made me marry this chick when I was 14 and now I'm 21, but we've never had sex because I wanted to do a celibate marriage like you're always talking about, even though you've been in India for like 7
weeks.
Months
yeah.
max.
I just met you, but it's so funny
But I've been doing this for 7 years, and also my wife is like really sick and can't get out of bed. But it was definitely.
I mean, that's a better reason to have a celibate marriage, honestly.
I mean, it seems like that's the real reason, and he's just being like, "Oh, yeah, but we did it because like your shit, totally. I knew that from 7 years ago, totally." At this point, Tertia, the king's wife, Macedonia, and Narsha, the nurse, show up at prison, and they're like, "What, Thomas? Like, how are you here? You came and got us and brought us in here." Thomas is like, "Ladies, I'm afraid you've just been the victims of a twin prank."
Classic twin prank featuring Jesus and Thomas.
And twin Judas twin. Actually, you know what? By this point, the book has completely switched to calling him Judas.
Yeah.
Which, like, that's not the decision I would have made as an early Christian, given the Judas that people will mainly think about.
I mean,
I would have like leaned pretty hard on Thomas.
In the main
personally.
Act, they also replace Judas with another Judas.
No.
Don't they?
No, they replace Judas with Matthias.
Oh.
But in some of the Gospels, there is a second Judas who's right. Also, I mean, yeah, it's a common name. Yeah. There was also like a Judas in the Maccabees and whatever. It's just the Greek version of the word, of the name Judah, which obviously it's the name of one of Jacob's sons and a whole country at some point.
So your point is?
My point is I still would have gone with Thomas, okay. Personally.
Me too.
God puts everyone in the jail who isn't a Christian to sleep for some reason. And Thomas sends Vazan to like go get stuff ready for their escape or something, or get stuff for a baptism.
It's baptism. Because they're going to have another weird baptism.
They're another
scenes.
Weird baptism. And so Vazan goes to his house. And then he sees his wife there. Her name is Manasara, or I guess just Nasara.
Mm.
I'm assuming it's Greek MN. I don't fucking know. I don't speak Greek. Even though he said that they don't live in the same house earlier. But whatever. Now they do. And he's like, "Whoa, how are you out of bed? This is amazing." And she's like,
I was feeling really horny. and I was thinking that tonight might be the night. And he's like, "Ooh, sorry." That's not actually what happens, but that would be better.
That's not what happens. That would be better. What she actually says is, "Oh, like, don't you see this youth? I had this dream that a man sent a youth to come, like, support me, help me up out of bed."
A man sent a youth.
And this is the youth right here. Don't you see him? And Vazan's like, "Nope, there's nobody there." And then Thomas and the gang bust in. Don't know why they sent Vazan ahead when they were literally, like, 5 minutes behind him.
Yeah.
And she's like, "Oh my God, that's the guy who sent me the youth in the dream." Thomas is like, "Nope. You got twin pranked."
Classic twin prank.
"And healed from your disease." Then they do this again, the baptism. They all get naked and wrap themselves in linen.
I got to read some of this baptism because okay. It's so weird.
It's like not like any other baptism that we've seen in the Bible.
Having thus prayed over them, the apostle said to Macedonia, "Unclothe thy sisters." And she took off their clothes and girded them with girdles and brought them. But Euzanes had first gone before, and they came after him. And the apostle took oil in a cup of silver and spake thus over it, "Fruit more beautiful than all other fruits, unto which none offer whatsoever may be compared, altogether merciful, fervent with the force of the word, power of the tree which men putting upon themselves overcome their adversaries."
Obviously.
Super weird.
Yeah.
But it involves getting naked and then wearing something else.
Yeah. I don't get it. It's nothing like any of the baptisms we see elsewhere. Although the baptisms that we see elsewhere in the New Testament are still weird because mm-hmm. people speak in tongues and shit.
Yeah.
And people think they're drunk on new wine. But this one, it's like, it's weirder. I think this is weirder than speaking in tongues, honestly.
It's weirder. It's small weird, you know?
And then they take communion with the bread and the wine. After saying approximately 1,500,072.6 prayers,
mm-hmm.
Thomas just goes back to jail.
And this is the point when you're like, okay, so what's the point of
what
the
are
jail?
You doing here?
What is the point?
What's the goal?
Yeah. But
what's your end game here?
Thomas does explain the end game. He's like, "I'm not going to be with you for much longer. I've got a feeling."
Who said that before?
Mm-hmm. But he I love the way he does this because he sneaks in a little dig at his bro Jesus. I do deliver my word unto you, and I shall no more speak with you in this flesh nor in this world. For I go up unto my Lord and God Jesus Christ, unto him that sold me, unto that Lord that humbled himself even unto me.
He did sell him.
Yeah. He'll never let him forget it, too. They'll be in heaven.
And he shouldn't.
I mean, that's fucked. To sell your own brother?
To sell your own twin?
Yeah.
To sell yourself, basically. Mm-hmm. And the slaver has to pretend not to notice that it's your twin. Because he just needs a carpenter that bad.
I wonder if he just Jedi mind tricked him. Like, this guy looks exactly like you do. It's like, no, he doesn't. You're right, he doesn't.
The jailers go to the king and they're like, look, this guy just keeps walking in and out of jail.
We need more budgets.
There's nothing we can do.
Our
He's
door
magic.
Budget is pathetic.
They do say, like, this is the second time we found the doors open. It's like, well, maybe you should keep watch, you fucking idiots. Again, King Misdeus calls him up and he's like, who do you serve? How do you have these powers? And Thomas says, this is a really interesting line to me. You cannot hear his true name at this time, but the name that was given to him is Jesus Christ.
Yeah, it's fucking
Gnostic
as hell, yeah.
Gnasty.
Weird to see all this Gnostic stuff, which I associate with like people that like books. In with all this folktale stuff, which I associate with people that don't read books.
Well, I feel like that's the interesting thing about Gnosticism is that, especially with the Hymn of the Pearl, it's like there was a whole, you know, lay culture of Gnosticism going on that we just don't know anything about or just know very little about.
Yeah. I mean, it doesn't help that part of their whole thing was like saying, this is a secret and you'll never know.
I mean, yeah. Fair point. Finally, the king sends his soldiers to take Thomas out of the city limits and kill him because he doesn't want a popular uprising. Honestly,
very sensible.
Smart move. Yeah. Fucks in Jerusalem should have taken a lesson. Says a big long prayer and soldiers kill him with spears, whatever. He's like, oh, Jesus, like, died with one thing and now I'm dying with four. And I don't understand that because, like, Jesus died with... Why was it only one thing? He got like a million. He got whipped. He got speared.
He got pierced by one spear. Well, Thomas gets pierced by four spears.
Oh, okay.
Because there are four guys out there. When they take him out into the woods to kill him or into the mountains or whatever, the king's son is also there, just sort of like tagging along.
Yeah, yeah.
And then Thomas is like, hey, could you bribe these guards so that I could pray really quick? And the king's son bribes the guards. And so then
they let him pray.
Yeah.
And I'm like, for like 10 hours, first of all.
I'm like, guys, you guys are skipping a step in here or something. Like, why are you just...
I know.
I mean, I guess it makes sense that he's given up on life because that's kind of his whole deal. But at that point, like, that's just like breaking out of prison 1,000 times and then going
and
back.
And just going back. You could keep traveling in India. All the places in quote-unquote India.
Think of all the women.
It's a large land. Yeah, think of all the women that are sick of having sex with their husbands.
Yeah.
There's an untapped market here, and you're just giving it up because you want to escape your stupid shitbag body and go to heaven with your twin brother.
Play real estate-based pranks all day. It's a little callback to the first half of the Acts of Thomas.
His followers bury him in a royal tomb. I guess this royal tomb had an opening. he appears after death to all his followers, much like Jesus did with the disciples.
Which is weird. I mean, the apostles shouldn't appear after death.
None of the other ones do in the canonical gospels, no.
They have magic powers, but they're not actually Jesus.
Well,
this guy's just Jesus. This guy's just Jesus.
He doesn't resurrect, though. I feel like they draw a very arbitrary but thick line at resurrection. Mm. They're like, yeah, he's going to do all the other stuff, but he's not quite Jesus, so he can't quite go there.
That's true. And he doesn't, like, manifest himself when he's alive. Of course, Jesus doesn't either. So I don't know. But I guess he doesn't resurrect. But if you're appearing after your death as like an apparition, but Jesus was like physically back.
Yeah.
He broke the cycle.
Yeah.
Yeah. He took the blue pill.
Yeah. Mm. Like Cypher.
Mm-hmm. No, wait. Which one is... I don't know which one is which.
Well, in...
In the Matrix.
The Matrix?
Yeah.
I don't know. Isn't Cypher the one that betrayed them?
Cypher is the one, but he took the pill to, like, stay in the Matrix. But the other one is where you wake up. I think that's Red Pill.
Yeah, that's Red Pill, because that's what all the fucks on Reddit say.
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I took the Red Pill, and now I understand that feminism controls society.
Right, yeah.
And that's why all CEOs and politicians are still male. Anyway, there's a different son of King Mizdeus, and this guy is, quote-unquote, a demoniac.
Mm-hmm.
That's right, a demon maniac.
Mm-hmm.
As we learned last week in the first half of the Acts of Thomas, most children are possessed by demons, and that's why you shouldn't have any.
It's an unfortunate but true statistic.
Yes.
That most children
are
demoniacs.
Demoniacs. And Mizdeus, despite having fucking executed Thomas, he's like, oh, if I go get one of Thomas's bones and hang it around my son's neck, then he'll be free of demons.
Well, he didn't like him, but he can't deny that sorcerer had some powerful juju.
So he goes to the tomb, but it's empty.
Had...
Again, another parallel with Jesus, although in this case it explicitly says that somebody has just taken his body to Mesopotamia.
Yep.
Question mark?
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why Mesopotamia. Who can say? But the king takes some dust from Thomas's body, or where the body used to be, and uses that to heal his son. And that's what finally converts him. And then Captain Cypher fucking baptizes him, wraps him in linen, whatever.
And that's, I guess how it ends.
That's like the end, yeah.
So it's like, he's magic. His body has magic powers.
Yeah.
But he is not actually Jesus.
Yeah. He's just Jesus' identical twin brother.
That has like 98% of his
yeah.
power. Yeah.
And they're both extremely good looking, according to a Jewish flute girl
mm-hmm.
in the town of Andropolis.
I wonder what that flute girl is up to these days.
I wonder, too. I wonder if she ever got married or if she was like, nope, I'm going to be celibate my whole
life. Out of respect for that one Hawkeye.
Yeah.
I saw that one time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
That would make sense. It would make as much sense as anything else in this book. So you want to like write this book or whatever?
I would love to.
How would you rate this book?
I would give this book 8 out of 12 twin pranks.
All right. Would you care to justify yourself?
Yeah. So this is really just the second half of the same book.
Yeah.
But this second half really wasn't as inspiring as the first half was.
Okay.
In my opinion. Maybe we had just gotten a little inured to the whole Gnostic milieu.
Mm-hmm.
But this part of the story had a lot more repetitive praying,
yes.
which was real boring.
Yeah.
And I have to say that the plotting didn't really make any sense.
Correct.
I mean,
it didn't make any sense in the first half. But...
No, but it was charming in the first half, and now it's overstayed its welcome.
Mm.
The overall messages are pretty similar, but this one feels like kind of a mess of a piece just because of the like jumping into and out of prison for no reason.
Yeah.
He tells a story that's unrelated to everything else in the middle of it.
But it's actually related to everything when you think about it.
Mm-hmm. The fact that it's like a dressed up Jesus is so obvious and has so many plot holes in it that it's just like really difficult to deal with sometimes.
But that's like the point of it.
I know. And the fact that he's selling this version of Christianity that apparently consists of nothing except not having sex.
And dying, also. That's the main point of it.
And like, I'm like...
The main point is to die.
There are other parts of Christianity. Like, pretty good parts. Like, you're leaving out some A material in order so that you can make this into nothing but celibacy. And I'm like, well, I can't really get behind that too much.
I mean, he does say blessed are the meek and shit, but like...
And he's like, you have to take off your rich clothes to be a good Christian, but he was like meaning that in a Gnostic way, like take off your
fucking shit sack body.
Yeah, take off your like flesh robe.
Yeah. Ugh. I'm gonna give it 3 out of 6 open prison doors.
Mm-hmm.
And all three of those doors lead to Chiresias.
Mm-hmm.
I loved his portrayal. He was like actually written as like a real character.
Yes. Who was responding honestly to a situation.
Yeah.
A difficult situation.
And it's interesting that there's like actually is a contrast between him and King Misdeus, where when Chariseus is like losing his wife, he's like trying to figure it out. And he's like, no, I love you. It's not the no sex thing that bothers me. It's that you're my wife and I love you and I want you to be happy. And then King Misdeus is immediately like, fucking kill the guy. This sucks. I hate this, you know? And so it like makes Chariseus stand out even more as somebody who like genuinely loves his wife, which is like not something you necessarily see a lot in ancient literature. And certainly not in, like, it's weird in this text where marriage is completely devalued.
It sticks out so immensely because he's the only character in this entire book.
And I was really rooting for him. I was like, I thought that the happy ending was going to be he also converts.
Right.
But he's actually like the only character who doesn't convert.
Mm-hmm. And you can't say you have to blame him.
I mean, it's like this guy ruined his life, you know? But like, it sucks that the only person in this entire book, last week or this week, who actually acted like a human and actually acted in a way that valued other humans and like wasn't completely selfish, wasn't just about going to heaven.
Mm-hmm.
Like that one guy got fucked. Well, he didn't get fucked. So that's part of the problem.
Yeah. It's very Shakespearean in a way.
Yeah, it is. So I don't know. Like I did like kind of the folktale. I think the folktaleness worked better in the first half than we did last week. But
like when he blew up that dragon.
Yeah. But yeah, I mean, how are you going to argue with blowing up a dragon, right? Yeah. But I really liked the literary quality of this one character a lot.
I agree. It was very out of place.
Yeah.
I think I was reading this and I thought there might be, you know, like an opera, like a short opera or something in Chariseus and Thomas.
Uh-huh.
Thomas and Chariseus, like from Chariseus' point of view.
Uh-huh.
That this like sorcerer comes to town and he's got Christianity.
Bewitches his wife
and, you know, he has to like come to terms with it, and he loves his wife very much, but he's also like is not buying what this sorcerer guy is selling, and he supposedly looks exactly like Jesus. I don't know. That might be a top quality adaptation for somebody out there.
Any opera writers listening to the podcast?
It feels like an opera to me. I don't know why.
I've never seen an opera and have no idea what they're like.
Well, maybe one day you'll grow up and see your own damn opera.
Maybe.
But until that day, we have to fuck with this mailbag.
That's exactly what we have to do. We got another email from Craig the Pastor talking about early anti-Gnostic Christians, in particular Saint Irenaeus, or Irenaeus, who wrote an amazing parody of the wacky Gnostic creation stories, which Craig excerpted for us. Here's a small sample that I really liked. This is him like,
so this is a contemporary author.
This is
to
Saint
the
Irenaeus, yeah, like in the year 200 or whatever, pretending to be Gnostic and pretending to explain creation. But along with it, there exists a power which I term a gourd. And along with this gourd, there exists a power which again I term utter emptiness. This gourd and emptiness, since they are one, produced, and yet did not simply produce so as to be apart from themselves, a fruit, everywhere visible, eatable, and delicious, which fruit language calls a cucumber. Craig says, the obvious conclusion is that VeggieTales has been secretly implanting supreme mathematics and hermetic knowledge. It's
100% true.
Yeah, there's gourds and cucumbers in there.
Mm-hmm. And utter emptiness.
Yeah, all three.
We also got another email from Matt and Tori, who gave us some good suggestions for season 3 texts, although Matt doesn't understand why we wouldn't just do season 3 all about how awesome Paul is.
He's so awesome.
Yeah, I mean, he's great. But is he too great to do an
entire
season
about?
He might
be, like, too great.
We'll talk about it.
His dick might be too not neurotic. I think Paul suffers from a neurotic dick. I think that's his main problem.
He both is and has a neurotic dick.
Yeah, exactly.
They also sent us more pictures of their cat Meeks, who we already cursed, but we'll curse him again, because why not? So to Meeks, I say, up, thou wicked one and destroyer and enemy of mine house. For me, thy sorcery harmeth not, for I will visit thy sorcery on thine head.
Oh, that's a quote from poor Chiresias.
It is. It sounds like a tragedy, right?
It does.
Good stuff.
I love him. I'll be his wife. Sorry, baby, we're getting divorced. I'm going to go marry a fictional character from 2,000 years ago.
Well, I can't say I didn't see it coming. But that will do it for Sunday School Dropouts tonight. As always, you can follow the show on Twitter at SunSchoolDrop.
And you can follow me on Twitter at Lauren E. O'Neill. O'Neill spelled like Shaquille spells it.
If you have questions or comments or pets or suggestions, you can send all of them, including pictures, to contact at SundaySchoolDropouts.lol.
That's .lol, not .com. And hey, leave us an iTunes review if you please.
If you don't mind, that would pucker us up real good.
As always, I thank Nico for sound engineering, editing, and original music.
If you want to find out more about original music, you can check out my website. It's nikobakulich.com. That's nikobakulich.com.
And of course, thank you to Elise Carlton for our beautiful logo.
We'll be back next week with more Bibbly. We love you very much. We're proud of you every damn day that you get out of bed and do what you got to do.
Hell yeah.
And we will see you on Sunday.
Bye.
Bye.